Nice to have everyone back with us as we go through this weekend without baseball. But I'll tell you one thing, fans, over the next 20 minutes or so, you are going to enjoy baseball as we have our dear friend coming on, and that is, he is a Bay Area icon, as I like to say. He's part of the broadcast team of the Oakland Athletics, and that is Ray Fossey. Ray, how are you?
Marty, I am wonderful, thank you. And we should be playing, the Yankees today in Oakland. But we will get back soon. But I think first and foremost to, our condolences to all the families and the unfortunate things that are going on in the world, much less in this country. But we'll get through it. America always has, and baseball will be back. So as always, as I've told you before, now you were supposed to take it easy this year, and then all of a sudden, here you go. So, I appreciate the kind words and looking forward to getting baseball back. And, Marty, for sure, the A's, and I'm going to be partial to them, of course, but looks like coming into this year is going to be a very, very good season. So let's hope when it does start, it does happen, and we'll see what happens at that point.
All right. Ray Fossey with us. Ray, happy holidays, by the way, before we go any further. And I hope you enjoy the weekend. But let's talk a little bit about what baseball has sort of thrown out there as the trial balloons this week of talking about maybe games in Florida, the Grapefruit League, and the 15 teams here in Arizona playing games and sort of trying to get a modified schedule in as best they can playing down here in Arizona. And you know what the heat is like in the summer and the obstacles that baseball would have. What was your reaction when you heard about these, at least trial balloons that Rob Manfred sent out?
Well, I think most importantly, everybody's trying to get baseball back. And again, not to disparage anything that are happened health-wise. It has to be done in a way that the players, everybody can enjoy. But, Marty, the history of the game and how much baseball has meant to this country and unfortunate situations, catastrophes, and think of World War II, and you think unfortunate 9/11, how baseball kind of brought back America. And I think that's what the commissioner, Rob Manfred, is trying to do. I think baseball is trying to do that. As far as playing in Arizona, my first game in AAA was against the Phoenix Giants. It was midsummer. And I'll never forget staying in my hotel or motel room. I can't remember exactly where it was. But going to the park, and yes, it was hot, and I hit a triple off the center field wall. I got to third base. I'm trying to catch my breath because it was hot. But, Marty, I cannot envision any time in Arizona being any hotter than Arlington, Texas, without the roof, which they have a brand-new stadium. And one of the reasons they put a roof on it was because of the heat. But I will say, and I'm sure in the National League parks there are some with the heat and humidity back in the Midwest and East. Similarly, I know St. Louis is that way because the A's played there last year. I grew up in Southern Illinois, so I know the heat. And then you add the humidity on top of it. And I think you can understand that in Arizona, because there are more swimming pools, more irrigation, there's more humidity. But still, I don't think heat would be a problem because you don't have to worry about getting loose because the heat would be there. And plus, you have Chase Field that they could play as well. So we'll see what happens. But I think first and foremost, there are a lot of obstacles, having players stay quarantined and then going to the park and getting tested and their temperatures, et cetera. But I think the bottom line, if baseball can come back, it's going to help America, because right now the only thing people can sit in their homes, and most, I think I heard, over 3 billion people in the world are hunkered down and shelter in place. So I think they would like to get live events, and if baseball can be a part of that, I think it's going to be tremendous.
Well, I agree with you, and it is a health question for everybody as well.
Yes.
And I said
absolutely. This,
no matter what they do, if they played 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 week, had a 30-game tournament, whatever it is, for me this season, the most important thing is the health of the country. And also getting baseball back if they can do it. So for me, I don't care how they do it, and I don't care what they do to the season and the record books and all that. I think it's most important just to play baseball and not worry about seven-inning games or, this kind of stuff. Just get the game on the field.
No, I agree 100%, Marty. And, best-case scenario, if baseball were able to begin with no fans in the stands, and the real best-case scenario – And let's hope, that maybe it can happen, that we could maybe get back into the stadiums with fans there. And, of course, football is going to be very important this upcoming fall, I think, especially in college football. God forbid that sport is eliminated because of the revenue that it brings in for all sports in college, and it could have a trickle-down effect with all the sports, especially like baseball and some things that have happened. But you're right, Marty. Health is the most important, but let's hope and pray that baseball can come back and kind of restore some sanity in America, because right now I think we all need it.
So Ray Fossey joins us. Ray, what are you doing to keep in touch with baseball during this period of time?
I'm reading just like you, Marty, and my wife, Carol, and I celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary a week ago today, and I was thinking, Marty, that I started with Cleveland in 1970, and people say to me now, how did you get married on April 4th? I said, because we didn't start till April the 7th, and I remember our honeymoon was spent in Cleveland. So I guess appropriately, 50 years later, Carol and I had a very quiet 50th anniversary celebration. We did FaceTime with our kids, Nikki and Lindsay, and our grandkids. And so, you know, it was kind of that way. And I told Nikki, or Lindsay, who has her anniversary with their husband, Scott, on April the 5th, one day after ours, I said, we could all celebrate when this gets down. We'll have a huge celebration with everybody and all the families together.
Oh, beautiful. Congratulations and love to Carol on that that milestone. Ray, a couple of things. You know, you and I have talked baseball over the years, and I always say, let me just give you a name and you tell me something about the person. But we just passed, and I know you commented on it. I saw it during the week, the birthday of the late Catfish Hunter, which was April the 8th, just a few days ago. And, of course, you caught Catfish, and looking at the record books, Catfish pitched 30, Ray, complete games in 1978, I believe. He's the last one to pitch that many complete games. But you caught Catfish, and you're a good friend of Catfish. Maybe some of your thoughts on Catfish Hunter.
Marty, my first game was in spring training, and I'll never forget being traded from Cleveland to the A's. And I'll be honest with you, I grew up collecting Stan Musial's baseball cards, the late Al Kaline, who, you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about as well, who passed away earlier this week. Just a tremendous person. But Catfish Hunter, the first game I ever caught, because in Dick Williams, when I reported to Mesa, Rendezvous Park, I showed up, and Charlie Finley had said, you know, I want you up there because you're going to take pictures for the yearbook. And Dick Williams said, scorebook, pictures, my you-know-what. And he says, you've had 10 days to learn this pitching staff. And my first game was Catfish Hunter. And Marty, I'll never forget, I caught him for five innings. He faced 15 batters, 15 the easiest outs I've ever been behind the plate catching. I didn't break a sweat, and you know, with 10 days to go in late March in Arizona, you know how hot it can be. But he was just an amazing control pitcher. And there were times that I would be behind the plate. You know how the umpire, and people can envision an umpire getting behind the catcher as the pitcher is taking his warm-up tosses. And I remember umpires would say to me, they'd whisper and say, this is going to be a fast game. You know, I'd say, oh, thank you very much. And I'd move about 6 inches outside because, see, that was at a time before they had Questex and all the umpiring grading. So basically, if I set up on the corner or on the outside, I would always split the outside corner and then keep moving and moving as far as I could until the umpire stopped me. But as far as the pitcher and Catfish, with tremendous control, would hit the catcher's mitt, the umpire would say, strike. And the hitter would look at the umpire and say, swing it, it's a strike, you know, let's go. But that was how great he was with throwing strikes. He, you know, and unfortunately, you know, he was diagnosed with ALS, and I remember going to Hertford, North Carolina. I was honored, Marty, when I think it was Fox, or somebody was doing 20-minute segments on athletes, and they wanted to do Catfish Hunter. And, you know, I get goosebumps, and he's talking about being humbled. He said, I'll do it if Ray Fossey can do the interview. So I flew to Hertford, and I spent all day with Catfish Hunter. And I remember asking him, how did you develop such great control? And he showed me the barn. And he said, my brothers told me that if I can't throw strikes, I can't play with them. His brothers were older. And so he learned to throw strikes so he could play baseball with his brothers in Hertford, North Carolina, I'm sure after working the fields and playing baseball. But just a tremendous person. And, you know, Marty, unfortunately, in 1975, fortunate for him because he really became the first major free agent before 76 when free agency opened up. But he told me something that he never, ever found out. He said, I could never find out because Charlie Finley passed away. But he said, I honestly believe that Charlie Finley knew that free agency was coming, and he wanted me to be the first. Because if you think about the minimal amount of money that it took to keep his annuity in place. You know, if you really look at that and you say, wait a minute, something's wrong here. But Catfish went on to be a free agent. He signed with the Yankees because of trying to think of the scout who scouted him.
Well, plus his agent was a big part of that, too.
Well, his agent was, but also the is it Klutz, scout?
Tom Greenway,
but anyway,
Clyde Klutz.
Clyde Klutz scouted him whenever he was at Hertford, North Carolina. And whenever Catfish became a free agent, Klutz, I think, was with the Yankees, and his loyalty to Clyde put him in Yankee Stadium, or at least with the Yankees. It turned out to be great, and unfortunately, at that point, then diagnosed prior to the ALS, where he was diabetic and shortened his career. But a tremendous person, Marty. I mean, there's nobody better than Catfish. The funny thing, too, whenever he went to the Yankees in 75, and we all said, hey, he never likes to pitch inside. He throw to the outside part of the plate all the time and throw strikes. So we're all saying, hey, remember, he doesn't like to pitch inside or doesn't want to because, you know, if he makes a mistake, so he pitched away. The first batter, I think it was Campy, Campy's looking outside, he's brushed back. And Catfish kind of looked and dug out and said, don't think about it, boys. I've never thrown to you guys, you know, so I know what you're thinking. But that's exactly the way he was. He knew that we knew how he pitched, but he changed when he faced the A's simply because of that.
What a beautiful story, Ray Fawcett. But, yeah. Ray, I said it last week on the show. It's you, Jim Palmer, and Hawk Harrelson. Nobody tells the baseball stories better than you guys. You know, this week MLB did a good job in putting some of the classic games on TV.
Yeah.
And they did a nice story about the 75 World Series. Now, of course, 75 playoffs, you're in it against the Boston Red Sox. Louis Tiant is there. The Red Sox sweep all three games and go on to a classic World Series against the Reds. But I was thinking about asking you about Louis Tiant, because I know he's not in the Hall of Fame, but, Ray, watching him carve up the A's and carve up the Reds until about that last game when he gave up a couple of runs, Louis Tiant was unbelievable. Give me some of your thoughts on Louis Tiant.
Well, first and foremost, I caught him when I was with Cleveland. He came up to the Cleveland Indians organization, and he was part of a very, very good starting rotation, which is the four-man rotation at the time, in Sonny Siebert, Louis Tiant, Steve Hargan, and Sam McDowell. That's not a bad four-man rotation if you think about every fourth day. I caught Sonny my first major league game I ever caught in Cleveland. Sonny Siebert was the pitcher. He gave me the ball. I think he might have pitched a shutout, but he gave me the ball and said, you take this. You deserve it. So it was very kind of him to do that. But Louis Tiant, I think, became a better pitcher when he went to the Boston Red Sox, because with Cleveland, it was like, first of all, it wasn't a very good team. We didn't have good teams in Cleveland, unfortunately. We always thought we could win, which we knew we never were going to. And Louis was part of that, but then traded to the Red Sox and then turned around to face him in 75 as a member. And that hesitation pitch and smoking cigars in the shower, you know, the Cuban cigars, which, of course, he came from there. But just a tremendous pitcher. And, you know, when he could or did start his windup and drop that front foot and stop and then throw that Ephus-type pitch, hesitation, kids didn't know how to do it, how to react to that. But he was a very good pitcher and very, very instrumental in the success of the Boston Red Sox. Unfortunately, they didn't win the World Series until 04. But he was a very, very good pitcher. You know, the irony that what you just talked about in 75, Marty, is that Catfish Hunter left after the 74 season. He goes to the Yankees. Catfish was always the pitcher to start every series. And nothing against Vida Blue, Kenny Holtzman, John Blue Moon Odom, you know, the four guys with our rotation at the time. But there's something about Catfish that we always knew that if he started that first game, we were going to be up one game, nothing. That didn't happen in 75. The funny thing about that year, actually strange for me, was that when Catfish went to the Yankees after 74, in 75, Charlie Finley called me and he said, Ray, we cannot rely on pitching and defense. We have to go on offense and speed. So guess what? You're not going to catch. And I ended up going to the bullpen. So Claudel Washington, who had come up in 74 when I was injured, took over in left field. Joe Rudy moved to first base, who was the left fielder. Gene Tennis went behind the plate, and I went to the bullpen. But when we were down one game to nothing to the Red Sox in 1975, there was a ball that was hit off the left field wall that actually Claudel went back to the wall to to play it off the wall. It hit at the base of the warning track. And Alvin Dark, the next day, I'm out taking infield practice to get it ready. He said, come on inside. You're going to catch it. I went, what? I got like 50 at-bats all season, and now all of a sudden, Reggie Cleveland was the starting pitcher. His fastball seemed like it's 300 miles an hour. There's no way that I was going to do anything. I caught Vita Blue in that game, and unfortunately lost two in Boston, went back to Oakland, lost three there, or the third and final game there. But it was a classic World Series, like you said, especially with Fisk hitting the home run in Game 6, and they took it to Game 7. I mean, Joe Morgan got the winning base hit to center field. But that got a lot of attention as the big red machine in this classic World Series. And I think the thing that upset a lot of the Oakland A's players was the fact that they looked at that as being a classic World Series, which it was. But what about the three previous years when the A's won the World Series against the Reds, the Mets, and the Dodgers? It was almost like they didn't like Charlie. We're not going to give him credit or talk about the A's. And I think that upset a lot of the A's players.
Boy, what a time. What a time of baseball history. You tell the story beautifully. Hey, Ray, let's take a break. We'll come back. Okay. A couple of things. One, get your thoughts on Al Kaline, the Mr. Yeah. Tiger who passed away this week. Yeah. And also about Ed Farmer, who is a broadcaster for the Chicago White Sox, a good friend of yours, and who was a Major League relief pitcher. And we've got a very good Ed Farmer story that he told us that I want to play for you as well. So we'll be back with more with Ray Fossey right after this.